Okay, let's see. We're checking out the stomachs again. The first one was the rumen, and that's spelled R-U-M-E-N.
Right.
Okay.
That is the storage vault where all the food goes when it's taken in at first.
Okay, storage vault.
The next one is the honeycomb.
Next is the honeycomb.
And the third one would be the medipli.
And how do you, is that M-A-N-Y or M-E-N-I or?
Many, just like a lot of
them. Okay. Many-ply.
Many-ply. It looks like I was going off there.
The many-ply. The last one is abomasum.
Abomasum. Okay, now the many-ply, is that the one that presses?
That's the one that presses.
Okay, so the rumen is where it goes down into. Then after it, and the cud comes up from there.
Right.
And then the cow chews the cud, and the esophagus shunts it off into the honeycomb.
Right.
And what, in a sentence, does the honeycomb do again?
It's just an area for temporary storage until it moves on.
Okay, and then it moves on into the press part.
Press part. It's someone pressed the liquid.
Some of the liquid is pressed out of it, and then it goes into the abomasum where it gets its stomach digestion, the true digestion.
The fermentation and breaking down of cellulose and things like that probably happens in the rumen, and then the true absorption and digestion starts in the true stomach or abomasum, and then it continues on through the intestines from there.
Okay, fine. Well, that helps a lot.
Now, a horse has a stomach very much like our stomach.
Horse has a simple stomach, okay.
But, of course, they're not carnivorous or vegetarians like we are. They're pains. Now, the rumen...
But a horse doesn't chew a cud.
No, the horse takes the food down and stays. The ruminants are the cloven-footed animals, and that's the deer and the sheep and all the buffalo and all of the cloven-footed animals are ruminants. They ruminate or
chew the cud. Goats.
Right. Goats, right. Too.
But a horse is not a ruminant because it doesn't have a cloven foot.
Right.
Okay.
So that's the way
that's
you differentiate.
That's the differentiate. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that a herbivore is not a ruminant necessarily.
Right.
Because a horse is a herbivore. An herbivore doesn't eat meat. So a carnivore, herbivore, and then an herbivore, however it's pronounced, is divided into ruminants and non-ruminants.
Right.
There may be more groups than that, but okay.
A good many.
Dick is telling a story. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but we're working. Okay. We're at lunch at the airport. Okay, I saved it. The pages in there mostly aren't loose. Okay, hold on.
There was a fellow named J.M. Huguenin who lived over here in the edge of La Prairie Township. And apparently when your grandfather moved here, he was a preacher.
Yeah.
And he came down Prairie Avenue to go to Beloit. And something either happened, whether his wagon broke down or they were coming in a wagon.
Now, was it Jan or Grandpa coming down Prairie Avenue?
This was Grandpa.
W.J. Okay.
Your grandfather.
Yeah, W.J.
Right. Dover. And he stopped at the Huguenin place over there. And apparently, the way I understood it, old Jan's dead now, and I could never ask to find out. But apparently he stayed overnight there and told his story that he was a preacher and how he was going to Beloit to start farming. And this was apparently probably even before Ron was born. I don't know, was Ron born down there or was he born before?
He was four when they came to the farm, so yeah. He would have been a baby.
Yeah, so anyway, this supposedly is what J.M. Huguenin told the story. Now, J.M. Huguenin's grandson is my brother-in-law, so that was my relationship to him. He married my oldest sister.
Mm-hmm.
John Lee was J.M. Huguenin's grandson. But J.M. Huguenin told the story about Mr. Dover.
Mm-hmm.
And when he moved here, and supposedly he came down the road and either got stuck in the mud or something happened. He went in there, either went in there and stayed overnight or else he was in there and,
mm-hmm.
and conversed with him a while. So the old J.M. told the story for years.
Any more to the story than that? Any anecdote?
That was just about all it was. Well,
any impression of Grandpa? Or?
He was thinking that the preacher probably wouldn't make a living farming, but I mean, that was kind of the impression I got. There was a preacher, he'd been a preacher, and now he was going to go farming. And then, of course, he knew what kind of an operation eventually developed down there, a real nice dairy. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dad was talking, he ran into Mrs. Walsh in the grocery store at the Walsh farm, you know, that backs up with the dairy. and Dad told Mrs. Walsh that her father-in-law had said he'd give that young minister 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, let me read you. Just a minute, I just got the vulgar term for horse. Now we're going to hear about anatomy class at vet school.
When we were in anatomy class, why it, they'd...
if you give me more, you got to bring me a little more.
They'd well, the structures around the room, they'd pitch pieces of the carcass around.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kid in the class that was always giving me lots of hassle, and we just got through studying the genital organs, and my horse had a big penis, and we'd extracted the whole penis, and it was probably about 2.5-3 foot long, and so that strep went out of the class, and I picked it up, and I swung it down toward this guy, and he was sitting in his chair, and hit him in the back of the neck, and just kind of wrapped it right around his head. I'll never forget that. I was kind of a mean kid in school. I'll never forget that. His name was Lawrence, and he was always picking on me and doing things to me, and this was one thing I did to him.
Well, I got a story I wanted to include. Since I know it, I'll take it off the tape. Wait a minute, we're going to get a story on what happened to Bill.
Bill went up to Madison to the zoo and lived up there until he died after we got rid of it.
Hmm.
So he had a nice life.
Well, didn't he cause a lot of trouble down there?
Oh, yeah.
He'd get out
and raise cane and get in people's houses and get in the house and open up all the cracker boxes and the cereal boxes and dump them out on the floor and all the real time.
Would he ever open the animal cages? Or is
he he could do anything. He could open doors.
So dogs would get out and... You'd come in and find the dogs all out in use?
Find the dog chasing the monkey around.
Well, we better put in a chapter on the monkey. See, that can go in earlier than this. You see, you can have a chapter of Marcy visiting Doc Nylund's, because my dad was stopping frequently. And seeing the havoc that...
You get this gadget on?
Yeah.
Okay,
pail. Dick carries his stuff in a pail and not a... That's kit. Yeah. And you've got.
If I have a canning call, I have a canning bag that has all the essentials in that. But I don't normally carry a kit in the barn.
Mm-hmm. But your dad might have had one.
Yeah, he did have. He had a Boston bag or something that he carried the equipment in for the type of procedure he was going to do.
Yeah. Okay. See, we've just read the Unbuttoning the Cow, and now here's Dick again.
Bovine and cloven-footed animals all have cotyledonous uteruses. That's a cotyledon, that little button is a cotyledon.
Yeah.
The porcine or pigs and horses have what we call a diffuse placenta, and it just lays and folds. And generally they clean real easy. A sow will clean and come right with a little pig.
Mm-hmm.
And generally a mare cleans right away, and if they don't, they should be cleaned right away, because they're real subject to infection. Then the dog has a circumscribed placenta, and it's a ring, and it fits right around in the tube of the uterus, all the way around inside that tube, and the puppy lays right inside that ring like a donut. It's like a donut, and the puppy just rolls back and forth, and there's an umbilicus hooks onto that complete ring. It's a puppy, and the human has a discoid, and it's a big platter.
I've seen it.
Yeah, the one out of you would probably be that big.
That's definitely that big.
Right.
And about
right.
That thick.
Right. And that just fastens on one area in the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four kinds. Placentas.
Funny thing, when Elspeth was born, Bob was there. That was the only time with all four children. And he wanted to be in on it, but he didn't want to. And the way he did and the way he didn't, but we did. This was after he was sick, too, by the way. But he was sort of an offensive guy at that point. And I don't think my doctor much liked him. But he wanted to be there and see the baby born. And we're talking about distemper in cats.
Those that survive will have immunity. They'll transmit immunity for a little while to their progeny. But then as soon as the immunity runs out, why then all these cats have to do is get under the milk house or under the shed where another cat is stooled and digging it, because it's a disease in the stool of one cat in the mouth of another cat. They go in there and they dig to bury their stool, and they dig into that stool and they lick their feet, and then they've got the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And the virus lives in moist places. They're down under a crib, under by the eaves and everything. That's where the disease lives, or else in the vestibule or in the little place where they got grain back in a corner where they'd defecate. And then that's where the disease is. And those that survive the disease, they'll be around there and live, and they'll have kittens. But then again, as soon as you get a group that aren't immune, they'll die. They'll eventually die lots of times.
Okay, well.
Whenever I went with my dad down there, when we'd get through Boyd, he'd get a cigarette out and he'd start puffing. And so when he drove in the driveway, he'd flip the cigarette out so he wouldn't smoke it.
He wouldn't smoke while he was there.
Yeah, because he knew that your grandfather objected to smoking on the farm, so he never did smoke on the farm. Of course, I never smoked myself. Throw a couple drums of wood in there and pour fuel on it, and then it counted them all up that I knew I'd been writing to.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I was in the service, and I wrote all the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was writing to them, and I came over and scouted them all up to kind of look over who I wanted to maybe wind up with. And when I scouted her up, she was engaged to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
I just got out of the service. And they had gotten married. And she was engaged to him the whole time that I was married. And when I came back, she was a nurse and she'd been taking care of my mother. And one night, I came back from Kansas and I brought my daughter with me. Easter time. And she came over that night to see her. Because she talked to my mother about it. And she came over that night and I saw her. And talked to her. And she was engaged to this guy. She wasn't getting along with this guy. Thank you very much for the dinner.
Oh, well, thank you for this trip. Maybe you'll let me come again if I'm finding it so interesting. Even though I can't hold a twitch while you put them through the nose. Tell me what you were saying just then about a cow menopause and that they don't live that long.
Well, I think the average life of a dairy cow is probably 7 or 8 years.
Uh-huh.
Because they either burn them out or they get mastitis or something happens to them so that they really don't get to be a ripe old age.
Did he tell you that there's this cow up in Ashland that just died?
Did you tell him that?
I told him that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to telephone up there and talk to the owner of the cow.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd wait until Craig got here. Craig is coming Sunday.
Yeah.
And is going to be here for 4 or 5 days. And he sent that clipping. It was obviously in a paper out west. And so I thought he might like to be on the other phone when we called up and asked about this cow that was 39 years old, which is the equivalent of 239 years of the clipping in humans.
Now, when I first TB tested back in 49, I had to ask the ages of a lot of the cows. And in some of these older herds, you know, when the guys had pet cows and they kept them, whether they were producing good or not.
Uh-huh.
I mean, farmers did that years ago. And they didn't really know how much they were producing because they weren't testing and so on. And they didn't know whether they were good producers. Well, cows didn't burn themselves out then because they weren't worked that hard. It's just like people, you know, if you get out and work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, why, soon you're going to burn yourself out. And it's the same with a cow. If you're pushing a lot of feed through them and pulling a lot of milk on them, why, they burn out sooner. And then when a cow isn't profitable anymore, why, you get rid of it unless it's a pet.
And I can't believe that 39-year-old cow was profitable by any means.
No, she must have just been a pet. And after a while, they must have just seen how long she was going to live.
Right.
She must have been a village celebrity.
You know, a horse gets to a point where they're 25, 26, 27, 28 years old. Well, they aren't really good for much. You're just climbing on their back and riding a little bit. They can't really go out and do a day's work that you'd like to have them do. So people do keep them as pets, and they live to be ripe and old. And again, you asked about menopause. Now, I don't know. They go through a stage where they become... they aren't fertile anymore, and that can depend entirely on whether they've had diseases of their organs or not, or they just wear out. And I don't know. I've had horses that have had foals after they were 26, 27 years old, 25. I've got a filly Arab there that's
her mother was 25 or 26 when she was born. So.
But I really can't answer that question about menopause.
Okay, well, let's let that go then, since most cows won't. Your son said that a horse, I think it was your son that said it, because who else have I been talking to? He said that a horse, if you let it go a year or two after it gets to be about 15, it won't conceive. Yeah. So you sort of have to keep, if you want it to keep breeding, to push a calf, or, I mean, a foal a year to keep it moving.
It seems that Mother Nature provided this equipment to be used, and when you cease using it, that's when you begin to have problems. And I think sometimes that's true with humans in a way.
I think that we are healthier, we women are healthier if we don't die in childbirth.
Right.
By having had children.
Right.
I am less subject to breast cancer because of nursing babies and all sorts of things. I am better equipped for than, for instance, nuns have much more breast cancer
and
uterine cancer and things
cancer,
like that.
Cervix cancer and everything else.
Than married women who have children.
And that's hard to believe, but I think that's really the truth, that that equipment was put there to use, and if you use it properly and don't get involved in disease in it, why, and especially the nursing, these girls that don't nurse babies are making a mistake, because your uterus returns to normal sooner, because every time the baby nurses, the uterus cramps up and gets rid of the junk in it, and everything is better when it's used properly, I think.
Yeah, I adored nursing. I'd be glad for a baby anytime just to nurse again. I nursed Elspeth for 18 months because I knew she was the last one. So she was still, I guess she had her last nursing when she was 18 months. Demi, I nursed for 13 months, and the others a little less. But listen to this and tell me where I'm wrong, or where I've left something out, okay?
Okay.
You are about to begin to become a cow. One half of you is an egg in one of your mother cow's ovaries. The other half of you is a sperm in one of your father bull's testicles. Perhaps the cow's
uterus is Y-shaped. A human uterus is pear-shaped.
Right,
so
okay.
So you speak of one horn, right horn, and the left horn. And it's part of the fallopian tube, you might say. It's a widening of the fallopian tube, or else it's a Y-shaped uterus. I don't know whether you'd call it a widening of the tube, or it's just that a cow is designed, the uterus is designed for twins, so that it could have one in each horn, supposedly.
Uh-huh, okay.
And other animals aren't that well equipped. The pig has got a horn that's probably 3 feet long, and one pig is end-on-end in the uterus. So that's what the horns are, but the fallopian tube, the fertilization takes place up in the fallopian tube.
Oh, let me ask about pigs later. That's fascinating. I know more about cows than I do about pigs, and I don't know a whole lot about cows, but I'm learning. I watched them a lot, but I didn't learn all these details.
Yeah.
Well, okay, now can I say something about the horns, or with the, let's see, either the bull or anus shoots the sperm part of you into your mother's vagina when she is in heat. The egg and the sperm meet up above the uterus, in one of your mother's fallopian tubes to be exact, and join. Do they meet in a horn, or do they meet in the fallopian tube?
They meet in the fallopian tube.
Okay.
But then, if she were to ovulate on the right side, the sperm would travel up the right fallopian tube, and then your pregnancy can be in the right horn, generally speaking. In other words, the ovum comes down and implants itself right in the horn of the side that it ovulates on. You ovulate in every other ovary. 21 days it's on one ovary, and then the next 21 days it switches over to the other one.
Okay, fine.
But I think there's more right pregnancies than there is left. I can't answer that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Your sperm... I'm sorry. I'm just the beginning of this. This is a sick horse, right?
Yeah, he's got a scratch in his eye, apparently, in the cornea. You can see that there.
It's all cloudy.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get something here. And
this eye is all right. And why did Dick ask about the creosoting?
Because I've been creosoting. It could be in a... Could be something to do with the eye, I don't know.
Can you see the scratch?
Be right, hold Brown again. Be right there and right there, because he's got two spots of it.
Uh-huh.
had a girl that was going to work for me, and my truck got a lot of miles on it, so I dispensed with it. And this truck was Shirley's, and Judy just took some of my stuff in the truck and threw it in this truck and started out with it. So I've got to hunt sometimes for things. It isn't as well organized as
is the other one?
My truck was. My truck had 180,000 on it, so I had to...
That's a lot of miles.
Yeah, I had to get rid of it. I sold it to my kids for $2,500.
Just did something to make his eye all green.
It's a fluorescein dye, and it stains the cornea. And then you can see distinctly what where the erosion is. And he's actually scratched a chunk right out of the cornea there. And you can see the actual area. There's more white than there is actually damaged area, because the whiteness is the body's response. It sent cells there, and the cells are what's white.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there was cells damaged on the surface. Wanted to see how much area was eroded or whether there was anything there. Now he probably just bumped something in the stall or...
How about straw? Because I just put fresh straw in it.
That's possible. Wired like this, sometimes he might have come up and caught his eye on the edge of that wire, just turned his head or something and just scraped along there. That's a possibility.
It was all swollen up last night.
Yeah.
Came off to the farm. And yeah. Took it and took him out of the stall, wiped it all
out.
Now
you can really see the area that's eroded there. See it?
Is that where the green is?
Yeah,
that
where green, the green is really
green
on there. Yeah,
that's bright green.
The cornea actually is so smooth that you can't stain it at all unless it's eroded, unless it's scratched off. So it could be a scratch or I would be suspicious that he got out of that wire. Mm-hmm. Just rubbed it along the edge. He might have turned his head and didn't see it or feel it and jumped or something or looked when somebody was coming or heard something and just moved right across that cornea and irritated that. Well, I'm going to give him a shot, and a product we'll use will be what we call a foreign protein, and the purpose of that is to stimulate cells in his body. We're going to inject something in his body that's going to have his body know that something is wrong. This doesn't transmit anything to his body to say there's anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Because it's on a cornea where there's very little circulation. In other words, his body doesn't know that there's something wrong. But we want his body to know there's something wrong now, so it'll send out the cells to do the repairing. Then there'll be more cells in his blood to do repairing here where there's very little circulation. And then I'm also going to give you a medication to put in the eye. And it's probably 3 weeks or more before that'll heal up, depending on how bad it is. And it shouldn't be a serious thing. The eye itself inside is hurt. Now, the only thing that we are concerned about in a deal like this is that it could be a penetration. In other words, if he were to...
Doc Hyland's shining a light in now.
If he were to get a thistle in his eye, and a real common thing in the summertime, in the late fall, is to have these big Canada thistles growing up like this, bull thistles, and they've eaten every place except around them, and then they go down in around that thistle to eat, and those spears that stick out on them, that stick straight out from the thistle, have got one tiny, fine point right in the very end. And those things are ranging length from a quarter of an inch up to an inch, and he'll get his eye down there, and he won't see that coming because they can't see straight out with one eye. When you're looking together, you can see depth, but he can't see depth this way. He can't tell whether I'm coming or going on his eye. So he walks right into that spear and it sticks right through the cornea. And if it goes through the cornea into the humor, then it transmits an infection in there. And then we lost the eye. And then the iris and everything will go to pot. And I see a lot of those in the fall. And generally by the time you see them, why it's too late. But he's got corneal response there, so there isn't anything.
First thing Doc Nylands did was stick a little orange piece of like litmus paper in
this
the eye.
Is very common, or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we see a lot of those. It can be bad, and it might heal right up in 3 weeks. I mean, we don't know. It's hard to predict. All we can do is treat what we see, And
well, what happens if that whiteness doesn't go away in there?
He could have a permanent scar in the cornea, which would.
So what would you have to do so I can show him? Stain.
This is a natural. This is an accident.
Yeah.
So anything that's an accident, whether it's cut his legs and he's got huge scars on him or anything like that, if they're a natural accident, that has nothing to do with his showing. The only thing is, if there's two horses and one's scarred up and the other one isn't, and they're side by side, neck and neck, why, you know which one they're going to pick.
Yeah.
But they aren't supposed to discriminate any horses against natural accidents. If the horse were blind from a disease, or not a disease, but if the horse were blind from something inherited, why, then that's different. Or if he was crooked-legged because he inherited a crooked leg, why, then that's different than an accident. If he broke his leg and it was a little crooked because he broke it, they aren't supposed to discriminate against that. And that's the same for the eye. But if I said, oh, it's going to heal up, it's going to be perfectly all right, I'd be fibbing to you.
Yeah.
And but I think it will. I think it'll be perfectly all right. But if it isn't, if you understand what I mean,
you just can't
guess 100% on them. And I've seen a lot of them, and they clear up, and sometimes it takes 2-3 months before it'll completely clear up, and there won't be any damage there. But it doesn't look like it's that serious.
Okay.
I should get on the tape that this is Ding Dong. Part of his name is Ding Dong, and his nose is velvety, but it's also got a very sort of a thick toughness around the bottom. Also, that the green comes running out of his nose through the tear duct. That would be a good detail if I use it in a story. The green is now coming out of his nose, so it's going down through the tear duct, right?
Right, right. And that's one way to find out if a tear duct is plugged or not, is to use a stain in the eye. And plugged tear ducts quite often are the reason that horses have bad runny eyes, is that the tear duct is actually plugged up. And then their eyes run because...
Bill said that the shot needs to be repeated in 5 days. And he said this is the way they can tell if a horse has a plugged ear duct, tear duct, because the eye will brim over and because there's no place for the tears to go and give the horse runny eyes. But with this horse, it's run down through the nose. Mm. Now he's trying to put...
You can put that medication in there.
Put medication in the eye.
As often as you come here. And if you can't get in there, put the food in there, just run some in your finger and then wipe it up there. That eye's going to be sore. Now, we don't use cortisone in the eye on this instance, because what we want is inflammation. Mm-hmm. And when I say inflammation, I don't mean infection. I mean we want irritation so that the body sends cells there to help heal it. And actually, if this were a cow's eye and you wanted to get a rapid response, you throw a handful of salt in there and it'd get red and sore and it'd respond. Mm-hmm. And you'd get a lot of circulation to that area right away, which would help, just like when your eye gets red. And increasing the circulation increases healing, and that's what we're after. This keeps infection down on that cornea, so that's what this is for. But it won't relieve inflammation. If you put cortisone in the eye, that has an inflammatory response, and it relieves inflammation, which we don't want to do here. And the reason that I gave the shot is to stimulate the body that there's inflammation there and it'll start healing. So I think I'd look at it about 4 or 5 days again and just give me a gentle little stuff down over here.
Mm-hmm.
And repeat that shot and see that the eye is okay. But it doesn't look to me like there's been any penetration through the cornea. The cornea is pretty tough. It can take pretty good abusing, but a thistle will go right through it. And of course, sometimes when they get...
That's what causes the damage then.
Right, that causes the damage once it involves a humor. But this looks to be just on the surface.
Hey, you talk to her.
This is a Morgan horse, Morgan Stallion. And
we got a lot of those out in Vermont.
Yeah, that's, and you've probably heard Morgan.
Is that where you're from?
Morgan, well, I got a cottage there in the summertime, and we got some big Morgan farms near us.
Oh, because his sire came from out there.
From what farm, do you know?
Well, I shouldn't say it came from out there. His sire is Appleville Storm King. It was owned by the Big Bend Farms in out there, where does Mrs. Barton live? I can't remember where she lives right now.
In Vermont or?
Yeah, someplace out there.
Yeah.
It's owned by Doris Norton completely now. You know Doris.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's bought it all completely out now. But yeah, his sire has stood out there for a while.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where those farms are. They must not be near us.
Yeah, but she's quite a way, I guess. I never knew that.
Her father was Ron Gilgan, his wife Gilgan, seed corn and dairy. And she's writing a book about her experiences as a child in Beloit at the Dogan Dairy. And, and I was the veterinarian there, so she's riding around with me to kind of cure him and some of the things
we'll
that she
probably bring
as a
it
girl.
Up closer to the present, too. And I think we really need to get it up to the present. So,
she writes children's books, and that's why she's riding around today. But there's too many horses in my practice. It was all cows and cheese.
Will glycerin, I'm going to put some glycerin on his neck. Will that interfere with his horns? Okay. Hey, get over here. Get over here.
Those mares are both in full. Leave them alone. When are we due?
The end mare is due in 3 weeks.
Going to
get her taken care of right away because she's getting bred better.
Now, can you tell just by looking at them that they're in full, or have you had something to do with it?
I wrecked with a ball.
You looked them over. Well, that's a good vet. Yeah. She knows his animals.
She's not due until May 10th, the other one.
Yeah.
So. She's the one that should have never had a foal. That mare went through hell last summer. She went down to about 600 pounds.
When she had the foal out of the meat?
No, when she went out to pasture. And she got injured out there, and I was down in Iowa at the time with him. And when I came back, she had dropped about 200 pounds on me. And so I brought her home. I don't know.
She's okay now, isn't she?
She's as fat as a ding dong.
When you're pregnant, you have a tendency to get that way. Okay. Let me know, Dick, or 5 days, or if you have any problems before then, it looks a lot worse or something and you're concerned, why, give me a ring. Okay?
Lots of horses before.
Oh, yeah, must have my mother round to somewhat. Sterile milk.
Sterile milk?
Yeah. Defatted cow's milk, sterilized. And that's protein.
Now wait, that's what you shot into the body in the shot?
Right. And that's protein. So it acts as a foreign protein to that animal. And stimulates its whole phagocytes. In other words, you're dropping an atomic bomb right in the middle of a bunch of people and they're going to get right up and fight now. And that's what his cells are going to do. They're going to respond to that foreign protein that was injected in them.
And so then that'll go to the eye and
the blood that circulates in the eye will be loaded with elements to help phagocytize infection and get the bacteria that are in there and heal the injured area. So
well, that's interesting. It could be all, you could put in any other sort of protein too, huh?
Right.
So
we've used hog serum or just about anything, but in 49 I drove a Jeep, four-wheel drive Jeep, and I always had a four-wheel drive vehicle ever since I've been in practice. And I drove a Buick wagon and I drove a Chevy wagon and I drove until I got into this type of box on here. I always had a Jeep and a wagon in the early practice, depending on the weather as to what I drove. Well, now when I bought this type of one in 61 with a unit on the back and a truck, and it was four-wheel drive, well, it was all I needed in one unit. I mean, it was comfortable enough that you could have everything in it, and you didn't have to switch to a car to save your back or anything. The Jeeps just about killed you. They'd shake you up so bad. But so many places I went when I pulled my chute, my dehorning chute, you had to have some kind of a unit that would get it in the farm without having to switch to their tractor and fiddle around, and I could drive right in the barnyard back up to the door and so on. And it was handy that way. Now this is something new since you've been farming. There's hundreds of these things in this area, irrigators. Just hundreds of them. This is Atkinson's.
This is what? Atkinson's?
Atkinson's farm.
run there. This, right in this area here, the soil is a little light. It's a little bit sandy. And an irrigator works real good here because they can get a lot better crop in a dry year off the sand than they can in any other year. They can water and get a good crop every year.
Uh-huh.
Where if the soil is heavy, they generally get a pretty good crop every year. But the light soil, if the water drains away, and there isn't much rain, you just don't get a decent crop.
No. Oh, and there's another whole row of them down there.
Another one there. That covers 80 or 120 acres.
It's now, can they move around if they need to?
They can take these. Now, this one that sits over here, they can take that and put it up the other end of the field. See, there's another orange one there.
Uh-huh.
And this one belongs to Coots here, and it pretty much stays in this field. But that circulates around and covers that whole field up to I-90. When you go up on 90, you can see a dozen of them along this road.
Well, I'll take a look when I drive.
And this is really new in agriculture. They can get, they can put peas on the ground and get a crop of peas and turn right around and plow the peas up and put sweet corn in and get a crop of sweet corn off the same land and use light soil besides.
For heaven's sakes, in one season, because the peas are quick and early.
The peas are early peas and the sweet corn is late. Well, you can get both.
Uh-huh.
And now, there's an irrigator over there, and that one is a movable one. They've got wheels on them that make them go around. If they turn those wheels on the irrigator, then they can pull a whole long pipe down the road, pull it into another field and hook it up on another pipe.
Uh-huh.
And go from there. So now this field here has got an irrigator that he puts on it, and he's got a, out here someplace, I can't see it, but you see that line of grass through there where his irrigator sat. But he'll have a tripod out there where his irrigator sits, or a slab of cement, and then they can pipe their water from their main well to these other fields and slip under the road with the pipe and pipe with aluminum pipe from one field to another, so they can move the irrigators around, and they just leave a strip through the corn so they can pull the irrigator in and pull it out. Now, out in the middle of this field, he's got another one. These are small fields. It's kind of hard to do small fields. It's nice to lay out the whole farm and throw one big irrigator that'll do the whole thing. That's nice.
Yeah.
But they can't always do that. Now, this is reed road. We'll just go up reed road. And there's quite a few of them on this road. Now, here's another one over here.
Okay.
Now, you don't see any of those down by Dad's place there.
No.
And there's that one we saw over there. That's a pretty long one.
It is long, very long.
And there's one there's two of them on this farm here, I believe.
There's a big one over there.
Yeah.
Another one farther over. There's one there.
There's one here.
Oh, the place is covered with them.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. This is sandier soil, right?
Yep, it's a little lighter. Oh. Now, here they're apparently digging out here. They're digging an electric line in, or some of these fields, they've had some problems. Looks like he's stringing a line up there or something. Some of these fields, they've had some problems because the fields are odd shaped. So when the irrigator gets at a certain place, see now how this boom swings around the end here?
Uh-huh.
They lay an electric track in the field. And then when that boom gets to a certain place, it follows that track around, so that boom will switch, and it'll go clear out, that boom will go clear out and get this corner, and then when it starts down that side where it's narrow, it'll swing back and go down at an angle, gets the other end, it'll swing out for the corner, and then it'll swing back. Now here's another one over here. This country's full of them. And that raised I think Hodge got $500 an acre for renting this land here. This irrigator on here.
As compared to what, say, before they did it?
100.
Uh-huh.
And he rented a Tracy's seed corn so that they knew they could get put a crop of corn on their special seed.
They
knew they could get a good crop. See, now you've got a big one out here. Now that's a new one. See, that boom there swings way around.
Right. So the thing just goes.
And that comes over here, and it has to go around this set of buildings and then back again. So the reason he has that big long boom, it'll come up in this corner, and then it'll back out and go around these buildings and then go around. All automatic. Just follows that cable that's in the ground. They laid the cable in this ground last year. He had one of the first irrigators where this well is here, and then he took it down and sold it. He put this one up, and then he put that one on that farm. And these are all run electric. See, here's their transformer up here at the post, and the wires go down, and they go clear out to the pump in the field there and run that pump. open shed, and it's all got...
Great long shed.
A pit in the bottom, and there's slat floors. It's a slat deal, like your dad had slat floors for his little calves down there one time.
Uh-huh.
And then they piddle down through the slats, and that's what they do in that whole barn. It's a big pit, and he uses those red tanks that sit out there to pump it out. This is a pretty big operation here. It's Bill Arndt.
Roads backward and forward, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I've traveled up these roads all my life.
You like being a vet?
Oh, very much. I don't know what I'd rather be. Less than be a farmer. I think if I wanted to be anything else, I'd be a farmer. You might think, oh, this life is kind of independent in a way, but you're really a public servant because they expect you to come 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And sometimes they don't expect to pay for their services. You send them a bill that can never get the money. But it gives you a feeling of good when you go out and you can save a calf's life or a cow's life or save somebody some money, and yet you are, your job is preying on his problems. In other words, he's having problems while you're making money on his problems, which isn't good, but if you can solve his problems and make them less, why, that makes you feel better.
But it's also a certain amount of preventative medicine,
right,
too. You come and give them their shots and their...
That's true, but there's a lot of it. A lot of my calls are poor management.
I can believe that.
I mean, that's just, you can see that they've got problems, and their problems are their management because they aren't taking care of things properly, they aren't feeding them properly, and you can't get to everybody and tell them how to do things right because somebody else told them that wasn't the thing to do, that you should do it a different way. They weren't a veterinarian. Like somebody will say, well, you shouldn't spay your dog because that isn't good for him. You know, they should have pups. Well, Lord, we've got millions and millions and millions of pups in the country we don't need anymore. The dog should be spayed. And really, now we talked about uterine infections and metritis and mastitis and cancer of the breast. A dog that's been spayed when it's young never has cancer of the breast. And of course, its uterus and ovaries are gone, so it doesn't have any problems there. They go through a stage once in a while where they lose tone in their sphincter and their bladder because they've never cycled, so they lose kind of muscle tone.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to help that out by using a hormone on it, cholesterol. It stimulates the tone in the bladder and the vaginal tract and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
In older spayed females. But other than that, it's the route to go. They never cycle, they never have blood in the house, they never mess things up, they never get bred, unwanted pregnancies, and they don't have breast cancer. And
they don't have all those male dogs around,
right,
giving you all that trouble.
Problems, right. So that for a pet, I think every pet should be spayed. Then they say, well, they get fat. The only reason he gets fat is because you eat too much. And if
yeah.
they feed him too much, they'll get fat. They'll be just as fat as an open female as they will be with a spayed female. And I've seen fat dogs that have been castrated, and I've seen fat dogs that were never castrated. So it's all in feeding. You have to put the food in the front door to get them fat. Some farmer could castrate all his steers or all his bulls and make steers out of them, and if he didn't feed them, they'd be thin as rails, and they'd never get fat if he didn't feed them.
Yeah. Now, we have a cat. In fact, you or somebody up at your place spayed her several years ago, Mighty Mouse.
Yeah.
She's probably on your records. Now, Elspeth wouldn't let me have her spayed, and her older sister Jill insisted too, until Mighty Mouse had one litter of kittens, because they said it makes her humor so much better. Is that true, or is that
an
old wives' tale?
I don't know.
Mighty Mouse's humor is not very good.
I'm inclined to think it's a wives' tale. The only reason, well, if first place, if you wanted them to have a pregnancy first before you spayed them, the first thing, they shouldn't have their pregnancy on their first heat. That's too young.
Yeah.
And you can get into all kinds of complications. So they should wait till the second heat. Well, after all, it's this mess and fuss and pregnancy and kittens that you want to get away from. So I think that we should eliminate some of the thoughts that it might not be the best. Maybe it's best because you don't have the problem of pregnancy, the possibility of a dying,
yeah,
and all these other things that complicate it. From a hormonal standpoint, from the standpoint as to their mental adjustments and everything, maybe it isn't right. But so many of them say that it is, and there's so many things that are against that it isn't, that yeah. I would sooner go along with spaying when they're 6 months old. It's a lot easier operation for the veterinarian at that time. You're less liable to have problems than when the uterus has been pregnant, especially in the dog. The uterus is bigger, and it's more problems to get out. And we do have more problems with them than if they're done when they're 6 months of age. So there's another thing that's a plus one.
Uh-huh.
So all these things can add up.
Tell me about cow dehorning. I don't have my cow here. Maybe I should finish reading you this little section and be sure
okay.
that that's clear enough.
Oh, yeah. Some of them will even mother the calf and chase the own mother away and want to mother it.
Oh, now wait. That's an interesting point. Here, we had this turned off, and I've just asked Dick if it's true, which I think it is, that the cows stand in a circle and watch, and he says yes, and then you said they'll try to even take over the calf?
Right. Some cows are mothers to any calf that comes along. They'll just mother it and want to take it away, and sometimes you can't decide who's had the calf because somebody else will mother it.
Oh, that's marvelous. Yeah. That's marvelous to get in here. Okay. Well, I'll add that in, that you have to protect your calf from such and such a cow who insists that it's hers.
Right.
And, okay.
All right. What he had when he...
See, one of the problems your dad had...
When he was, when he bought out that herd and brought it there, and he was selling calves to ABS...
Now, is this Ron or is this
Ron,
WJ?
Ron.
Okay, Ron.
That was just before he sold out everything. He had to produce calves for ABS, bull calves, that they could, because they were out of good cows, tested cows and everything. And sometimes if two cows had calves in the pasture at the same time, it was hard to determine who had the calf. So they had to blood test the cow, and they knew the bull's type. They blood tested the cow and blood tested the calf to be sure they knew which cow it came from.
Because the cows might have mixed them up themselves.
Right, they might have got mixed up.
Oh, that's marvelous. Okay, what are we doing here?
This is my barn. I thought we'd stop here for a minute and go in and I'll see what's going on. And
okay, fine.
And look at a different kind of horse installation.
Okay.
Logan. Julie Wright.
Hi, Julie.
Julie is one of my helpers. And Julie and Judy. And Judy is the one that's off getting the...
She's the horse expert on...
Right. And this girl soon will be. She started out that way. She worked with my sister a good many years ago with ponies and started out when she was just a youngster with ponies. She's really enthusiastic about horses. This first horse here is High Jules Dandy. And he's a stud, belongs to Barney Groma from the Millworks down in Lloyd. And he's a $70,000 or $80,000 animal. Barney turned down an offer for him for $75,000 or $80,000 a couple months ago because I had him leased. We leased him to breed him.
You don't look too impressive right now.
That's the one you were advertising out there with those
right.
people.
Yeah, we saw a couple people today with horses that we left information with.
Now, what's the thing hanging there?
Oh, just something for him to play with.
Well, how nice.
He doesn't play with that as much as one down below your Roni. You put it up there and he'll rip it right down and just tears at everything.
I didn't know horses needed anything to play with.
Oh yeah, they have problems like...
They get bored?
Yeah, and they eat things. They eat on the walls and eat on the wood and everything else. Yeah, Roni, the other one, gets into all the trouble. This was just built in November. We started in November and Judy and I put all the walls up, put all the stalls up in our spare time and put a little barn up here. Dug all the, you know, digging and all the fixing, and then Judy went to work for us right about Christmas time, or just before Christmas. So she's helping now.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is one of Dandy's foals here that Barney is exercising. He and his daughter showed the horse this year. And
See, now Barney's daughter isn't out here, but this is Barney, right?
Right. Barney?
Yes.
This is one of Ron Dogan's daughters. You remember Ron Dogan down at Beloit? This is Jackie. She followed you in school quite a ways back. Did you go with school with Craig? He was younger than you, wasn't he? The one that was a doctor. I guess he was. Craig.
No,
was
what's
Craig?
Barney's last name?
Gromis.
Barney Gromis.
Gromis Millworks.
That's not familiar to me. I graduated in 46 from Beloit High.
Well, I was 39.
Uh-huh. Well, then you would have been ahead of my oldest sister. She was 42.
What was her name?
Joanne Dogan. So, she would probably have still been in junior.
I would have been a senior in junior high.
Either that or else she a freshman.
That's right.
So you would have.
She came down the year that I left.
Yeah, so you would have missed her completely.
Yeah, she probably would have been with my younger sister. Because I think June went down to high school when I left.
Now, that horse seems to know what you want her to do, or him.
Yeah.
Going faster now.
Now, this is what your grandfather was doing with that horse, teaching it to... teaching it to go around and round and round and round and teaching it to do the things you want it to do.
Uh-huh.
Jackie's writing a book. She's written a children's book, and she's writing a book about her experience out to the Dogan Dairy when she was a child, and I was involved somewhat in that experience because I was a veterinarian, and so now she's riding with me to learn a few things that she's written down to see if they're accurate, and so on. So she's.
Is this your first stab at a book?
No, I've had 10 published.
Oh my golly. You're an old salt.
I'm an old salt, but this is one I've been wanting to do for a long time and have never gotten the form with the material, and I think I finally got the form with the material. Have you been finding that stuff entertaining? I was reading it.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm hoping everybody will.
She does a nice job there.
Well, I want to have more vet stories in, because I remember certain things that I want to ask you about too, and how you got them treated and so forth. If we don't have time today, well, maybe I can do it another time, if not this trip, or
I'll call the office and see what.
Yeah, I don't want to interfere with your job. I just want to follow you around and talk in the spaces. Would calls have come in that wouldn't have beeped you?
Yeah.
Occasionally, I've been some place where I couldn't get beeped, and radio messages didn't do that.
Uh-huh. It's interesting the way Dick has a beeper. The old Doc wouldn't have had a beeper. Now, old Doc would have had to telephone in from someplace far out and say what's going on.
That's right. And then I've got a radio, but I didn't put it in this last truck. I've got in the other truck. And the radio isn't any good unless there's somebody up in the office answering the phone and somebody to transmit the message to me. So this beeper, I don't know whether it's really the answer to it, but I've given my customers beeper number, so if they call the office and they don't get any response, well, then they can just have the girl beep me and tell me the message. And generally, if I get a beep message and I'm concerned that Jensen wanted, well, he doesn't have a phone out there in that barn, so I couldn't return a call. But if it's emergency, I try and get to a phone and return the call. What? It's a pretty good scratch in the car here.
Did you get up Deckerson?
Yeah, Decker's worm. Help on, but when it comes to handling the horses, I like to. Have you used that before on the whiskers? You know something?
Mm.
If those whiskers are good and tough, you might clean the little blades right out of that.
Yeah,
I say don't cut whiskers with it, because I've cut whiskers with them and had them.
I want them to get used to the noise.
Yeah. See, now when you have to get real tough, why, then you put the twitch on their nose and crank it up tight, and then they hold still while you're fitting.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that they do this exercise, and he wants to get this horse's muscles hardened up and develop it, and so he'll eat more, and he'll fill out more, and he gets more muscles.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get muscles just standing in stall, and they want him to look muscular, and be strong looking. And that's the reason that they do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for the wrap on his neck, they sweat their neck a little bit. The necks have a tendency to get a little coarse. This guy is a stallion, and they like to sweat the neck, and it kind of keeps the fat out of it and keeps it a little slimmer and trimmer.
That's interesting.
And, so that's the perfect thing.
That's the way to do it.
Well, he seems to be getting used to that.
Finds out it won't hurt him. Right? And Dandy doesn't like to have his ears clipped. You can do anything except when you get up on the pole of his head. Judy can trim his whole face and trim his neck and trim his bridle path and everything else, but when she gets up around his ears, well, then he has a fit, so we have to twitch him.
Why don't we do a little more, huh?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about somebody and a horse is a cribber. Tell me, explain the term cribber.
Well, a cribber is a horse that grabs hold of the pipe here or a piece of board or something like that and bears right down on it, and then they suck wind and they go and they'll crib until they get their gut full of air and they chew everything up and they're kind of nervous and they really have a problem. And it's a bad habit. It's as bad a habit as the monkey had.
Okay.
When you fill out an insurance form and have to, they always ask on there if the horse has any bad habits, and cribbing is a bad habit, because a horse cribs and he gets his belly full of air, and then he doesn't, he can't operate, he can't ride, he can't show, he can't do anything good because of this fact.
That's interesting. That's a term I've never heard before.
Now this horse down here is a cribber.
Keep the edge of his bucket,
his pistol here a lot of the time, because he'll stand and put his teeth in the bucket and suck on it and push on it.
He doesn't like the taste of the creosote, so he won't do that.
So then he doesn't do it. So if you can have the stall perfectly clean, so there isn't anything that he can get his mouth on to crib, then lots of times they'll stop it. They have a cribbing strap they put on him that squeezes right under here real tight so that they can't bear down.
Dick's holding his chin.
Cribbing, sort of thing.
Holding his neck around, right under his chin.
And, but this guy's a cribber here.
So you're a cribber, huh?
And this is a racehorse. These are trotters, these two here. And we have a track out here, which is all full of snow right now. We didn't get cleaned off, and these fellows came here to race on the track, and I've got to get it cleaned off soon, because both these horses are temporarily retired right now because of the fact that we can't get them out. They race in Chicago all winter. They keep the track cleared down here at Sportsman's Park and the other parks, and trot horses down there all the time. Probably because they're just, they're picked for their beauty, they're picked for their ability to trot.
Uh-huh.
And some of the other horses, depending on what you think is beauty-wise, depending on what you think is beauty, are more beautiful than others. Mr. Scholl, 2 years ago, and they had a full on Mr. Scholl, and this guy bought it, and I talked to him about bringing it here, and he's quite interested. He's quite interested.
Mare?
Another gal, bringing it to Dandy. Then there's another gal that's that one that's just two, and she was kind of interested too, so that would be a next year deal. It wouldn't be a this year deal.
What about Saturday? Have you been out there again?
No, I haven't been out there since we went back the last time. But
is
I think
a
that.
Thing?
Yeah, you can scrape the bot eggs off of that.
That's a bot thing, isn't it?
No, comes in a block. And they, what they use it for is cleaning the grills and hamburger chops. You ever seen a clean grill and hamburger chops? Oh, then we just cut them up.
Yeah.
Clean the grill at a hamburger shop, sort of a pumice stone.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's all I got left.
You can clean bots off your legs with it.
Oh yeah. But what it's good for is around where you can't use a curry comb.
Yeah.
And it's also good down in your, in here you can't get a curry comb because it hurts them. Look at the hair come up here.
Yeah.